This coming Shabbos is of course going to be Parashat Pekudei, the end of Sefer Shemot. We don't read the Haftorah for Parashat Pekudei because this Shabbos is going to be the first of the Arba Parashiot, the first of the four special Parashiot that precede Pesach. It also coincides with the time that women's blood pressure begins to rise, because one understands that this is it. We are now in the final process of, or certainly the beginning of the process of getting ready for Pesach. Parashat Shkolim, that's going to be this Shabbos, and we'll talk a bit more about Shkolim. So the Haftorah is going to be the Haftorah for Parashat Shkolim, Parashat Pekudei, which is of course the end of Parashat Pekudei, which is of course the end of Sefer Shemot, and it's a triple header because it's also the second day Rosh Chodesh Adar. That means we're going to take out three Sifrei Torah this Shabbos. In the first Sefer Torah, we're going to, six people will be called to the Torah from Parashas Pekudei. In the second Sefer Torah, we're going to read the Parasha of Uv'yom HaShabbos Uv'Rosh Chodeshechem. And the third is going to be the Mafter, which is Parashat Shkolim, which takes us back to Parashat Ki Tisa, the first few psukim in Parashat Ki Tisa, which say that when the Jewish people are going to be counted, they should each give a half a shekel. Now, the idea of giving the half a shekel is also related to the beginning of the month of Adar, because there is a Mishnah in Masechet Shkolim that says Be'echod Ba'odar Mashmiim Al Hashkolim. On the first day of the month of Adar, the Sanhedrin would make an announcement in all of Eretz Yisrael that the time has now come for everybody to bring their half shekel. A half shekel was given by every Jew once a year during the course of the month of Adar, leading up to Nisan, because on the very first day of Nisan, sacrifices in the Bet HaMikdash would be brought from the new shkolim. In this way, all Jews were united in their share of the service in the Bet HaMikdash. Everybody gave a half a shekel. These half shkalim were used the whole year for the sacrifices in the Bet HaMikdash. Every Nisan, you have to start a whole new cycle in the Bet HaMikdash. Be'echod Ba'adar, the first day of the month of Adar, there is an announcement, people should begin to bring their shkalim. So, of course, the special Shabbos Shkolim and the special reading of the Torah and the special Haftorah are all part of hear ye, let it be known in all of Israel that the time has now arrived to give the half shekel. What's going to be fascinating during the course of this year is that and while this was not inspired by Phil, but Phil told me something now that was very interesting, because I told him that I find that there's a very significant relationship between the Haftorah and Parashat Pekudei. Now the Haftorah is not chosen as a Haftorah for Pekudei. It's the Haftorah for Shabbos Shkolim. But despite that, there is a relationship, and I will demonstrate that. And he told me that the last time Pekudei and Shkolim came together was 24 years ago. And it will be so, he says, in another 4 years, and I never doubt Phil. Certainly when it comes to statistics, I don't know. And then following that, Zon Levin and Gesundsein, 44 years later, there will be another time that Pekudei and Shkolim will come together. Alright? So first let me give you an outline of what's going on in the Haftorah. You will notice that the first section is where Sephardim begin the Haftarah, and we Ashkenazim begin the Haftarah a little bit further. I'm very even-handed. I'm very open-minded. The Ashkenazim aren't always right. Last week when I explained, or 2 weeks ago, I don't remember what it was, when I explained why the Ashkenazim do what they do, so the question that was asked is, I gave such a good answer, so why did the Sephardim do what they do? And I think the Sephardim have a point this time. Don't ask me why the Ashkenazim do what they do. But let's get the story down straight. Vayichrot Yehoyada et habrit bein Hashem ubein HaMelech. Yehoyada made a covenant between God and between the king ubein Ha'am and also between the people, the king and the people. Lehiyot la'am la'Hashem, that they're going to be a people to God ubein HaMelech ubein Ha'am, and a covenant between the king and the people. You'll see right away, I mean, it's not going to be here in the Pesukim, but I'm going to bring you up to date on the fact that there's a lot of history that precedes this Haftorah. Now, if you read the Haftorah from where the Ashkenazim begin and where the Ashkenazim end, it's possible to read the whole Ashkenazi Haftorah and not have a clue that there's a great deal that preceded it, and there's a great deal that follows it. Tragic circumstances, and then of course miraculous circumstances that precede, and tragedy that follows. The Ashkenazi Haftorah, you will see, is simple, straightforward, yet profound. But wait, okay. Yehoyada is the Kohen Gadol. We don't even know yet who the king is. They haven't said who the king is. That we'll find out by the Ashkenazi Haftorah. He enters into a covenant between God and the people and the king, between the king and the people. Vayavo kolam horez beit habal. All of the people came to the house of Baal by Yitzuhu, and they thoroughly smashed at Mizbechotav, his altars, that Slamav, and his statues, Shibru Heitev, that Matan Korin Habal, Matan, who was the priest of Baal. Matan, by the way, is another one of those names that falls into the Omri category. Matan is, I don't mean the school, please. I don't mean the school. But there must be some good people also who are called Matan. Well, you know, Matan Vilnai. I don't know what he is. All right. Anyway. They killed Matan Kohen Abal Hargu. They killed him with Nehem Zbechot before the altars. By Yosef HaKohen Pekudot Al Beit Hashem, and the Kohen appointed guards over the house of God. By Yikach, and he took he took all of the officers at Hakodi Vetarotzim. These are different the runners to the royal palace. In other words, the palace guard. That kol am ha'aretz vayoridu at ha'melach mi'beit Hashem, they brought the king down from the house of God, vayovo derech shar ha'rotzim, and they came through the gate of the runners to the house of the king, vayeshev al kisei ha'melachim, and he sat upon the throne of the kings. Vayismach kol am ha'aretz, all of the people of the land were full of joy, v'ho'ir shokota, and the city was silence, was tranquil. That Atayohu himitu b'acheret beit hamelach, and Atayohu they killed by sword in the house of the king. So obviously I have to explain to you what's going on over there. There was a terrible, terrible tragedy. Terrible tragedy had taken place 7 years earlier. 7 years earlier, Achazyohu, who was the king of Yehuda, and Achav, who was king of Yisrael, were both killed by a fellow called Yehu ben Nimshi. Yehu is the one who was sent by Elisha the prophet to destroy Ahav and Izebel and their family. And he also kills Ahaziah. Ahaziah is a son-in-law, of Ahav and Izebel. His wife is Atayahu. When Atayahu finds out that Ahaziah is dead, what she does is she wipes out the entire house of David. Because she wants to rule, I mean, profound tragedy, all of the children of the house of David. The wife of the Kohen Gadol Yehoyada takes a little boy, a baby, who is still alive amongst the dead, and hides this child for 7 years. Where is the child in hiding for 7 years? The last place in the world that anybody would look for him. In the Kodesh HaKodoshim, the Holy of Holies. The only ones who know are the Kohanim. 7 years, do you understand? This is another one of the moments in history at which it would seem, and there are a few such moments in history where it seems as though the royal line of the house of David is about to disappear completely. When is the first moment? When Tamar is being taken out to be put to death, and the twins that are in her womb are the ones that will be the progenitors of the house of Yishai and David. Last moment, Malchus Beis David is saved. Malchus Beis David being saved also means Mashiach being saved. By the way, that's the second. I forgot the first. Lot and his daughters flee from Sodom. They end up in a cave. Lot is going to be an extremely important figure in the house of David. Ruth is to be born from him. She's going to be the great-grandmother of David HaMelech. And she's going to be born from that illicit union, so to speak, between Lot and his daughters. So here it is, they think that there's nobody left in the world, and for that matter, they were saved from Sodom at the last possible moment. David is pursued, who knows how many times, by Shaul. David is pursued by Shaul. Well, if I skipped another one, what are you talking about? Ruth marries Boaz. Boaz dies the day after the wedding. And she's pregnant. By the skin of our very teeth, Malchus Beis David hangs on. Here, we're talking about Yoash, the king. 7 years he's being held and protected. And then Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol says the time has come that Israel has to know about it. He plans it to precision. And he has the Kohanim and soldiers ready. And what we've learned here is when he brings out Yehoash, and he shows the people in the Beit HaMikdash, there is a remnant to the house of David. The son of the king is alive. Yechi HaMelech. Then they kill Ataliyahu. Ataliyahu is killed. And there it is. Now, this is part of the Sfardim, but the Sfardim add to the Haftorah. It just lets us in on the fact that there's a story here. There's a profound, profound story. A story of tragedy and triumph. That when it will again become tragedy, and that tragedy is not going to appear in the Haftorah. After the Haftorah, there's another section about Yehoash already, the child who had been saved, is in a sense deified by the people. There comes a point in his life where they bow down before him because they thought that somebody who was able to survive 7 years in the Kodesh HaKodashim, the Holy of Holies, where only the Kohen Gadol and the Zion Yom Kippur must have in him some kind of divinity. And this leads to tragedy after tragedy. It's unbelievable. When man begins to think of himself as God, or when man begins to think of himself as the one who knows all and knows best and knows better than anybody else, then we're in for a lot of trouble. Yes?
He must be somewhat of a supernatural creature.
Oh, he was provided with everything. Oh, they provided him with everything. The wife of the Kohen Gadol, everybody took care of him. They diapered him, they washed him, they cleaned him, they brought food to him. Oh, no, no, no. He wasn't living... The Kohen Gadol, in that room where the Kohen Gadol would go in only once a year, which means it was the Holy of Holies, this little child is raised there for 7 years. He had kindergarten there, he had grade one, they taught him. Now I don't mean that he was left there alone. If that would have been true, then you're right. What do you mean? He has to be some kind of a divinity. But the people thought that just the fact that he spent 7 years in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that was already an indication of divinity. And when you take a leader of flesh and blood and you ascribe to him divine powers, you're in serious, serious trouble. The end is he becomes the first king of Yehuda, who's assassinated. He's killed by two of his closest servants. It's all tragedy. In the Ashkenazi Haftarah, there is no indication whatsoever about all of this tragedy. And it may therefore be, according to the Ashkenazim, that there's a different focus for the Haftorah, and that's what I want to talk about, that there's a certain focus that's terribly important. I mean, so much to say, let's just run through it quickly. Ben Sheva Shonim Yehoash Bemocho, Yehoash was 7 years old when he became king. And really, he was the king, but the one who was running everything was Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol, the one whose wife had taken care of him, the one who planned his coronation in the eyes of all of Israel. In the 7th year of Yehu, Yehoash became king, and for 40 years he was king in Yerushalayim, and his mother's name was Tzivya from Be'er Sheva. Yehoash did that which was good in the eyes of God, Kol Yomav, all of his days. Asher Horohu Yehoyada HaKohen, that Yehoyada the Kohen taught him. That is a very significant little difference between the way this pasuk appears here and the way it appears in different Divrei Hayamim. The way the pasuk appears here, there are two parts to the pasuk. Part one is Yehoash did that which was right in the eyes of God Kol Yomav, his whole life, period. Asher, why did he do good all of his life? Because he had been taught by Yehoyada HaKohen. There's a slight difference in the way it's written in Divrei Hayom. In Divrei Hayom it says Yehoash did good all the days of his life that Yehoyada taught him. Which leaves the indication, but after Yehoyada passes from the scene, then things begin to fall apart, which is historically exactly what happened. The high places were not removed. Odham is Zabchim u'mekatrim b'bamot. The people were still sacrificing and bringing incense. The bamot were the high places. Now the fact is that once there was a Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, you could only bring sacrifices and incense there, no place else. The Bamot that we're talking about are high places where Jews brought sacrifices to God. It was not idolatry. It was not idolatry. But it was a prohibited form of worship. From here to the end of the Torah, the Haftorah is going to tell us that Yehoash decides that he's going to refurbish and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And there are two reasons given by the Mefarshim why he decides on a complete rebuilding, restructuring of the Beit HaMikdash. First of all, it's 155 years, according to one opinion, it's 155 years since the Beit HaMikdash was built. And 155 years, you know, there are things that can happen. Blight, they call it here in legal terms. the natural erosion or the natural changes that take place that need to be taken care of. There are others who say, and this is a positive rayon that says that the children of Atayahu, the children of Atayahu, caused physical damage to the Beit HaMikdash. Children of Atayahu, of course, are therefore the children of Ahav and Izebel. There was, and it says that they were called Rishoyim, who literally caused physical damage to the Beit HaMikdash, and it needed to be refurbished. So Yehoash is going to institute now a system whereby all of the monies that come in, for example, the shkalim, everything will be given over to the Kohanim, and the Kohanim will have the responsibility of restructuring. In other words, he leaves the responsibility in their hands. All of the income of the Beit HaMikdash will go to them. And it means not only the income that comes from the half shekels that are given every year in the month of Adar, it also means people who donate for sacrifices and money is left over there, or people who make something holy and say, this shall be holy, and it's sold. All the money is going to go to the Kohanim, and the Kohanim are the ones who are now charged with the responsibility of doing all of the shiputzim. The shiputzim, that's it. Okay. This is the first shiputzim in Jewish history. Right. And it's been downhill ever since. Now, what happens is that it seems that after some time passes, Yehoash sees that the Kohanim are not doing the job that he had contracted with them to do. And watch what's going to happen. Vayehi, in Pasuk 5 it says, Yehoash told the Kohanim all of the money, the holy money that comes in, that's brought to the house of God. Kesef over ish, kesef nafsho seh. Kesef over is the half shekel. In the master that we read from Parashat Ki Tisha, it's going to say, kol ho over ala pekudim, everyone who passes by to be counted. Kesef over, this is the connection between the master and the Haftorah, Kesef Over. And all the other money is going to be given to the Kohanim. Everything goes to you. And what I want you to do is, Pasuk Vav, Yikhu Lam HaKohanim, the Kohanim should take it. Any money that they can get, Ish Me'et Makaro. In Divrei Yom, we're told that he indeed asks of them to go through Yehuda on a campaign to visit people in order to get money, because this is going to cost a lot of money. And they will repair whatever needs to be repaired in the house. Then it turns out in Pasuk 7 that in the 23rd year of the king Yehoash, the Kohanim had not done what he had wanted them to do. So in Pasuk 8, King Yehoash calls Yehoyada the Kohen and all the Kohanim, and he said to them, Madua Einchem Mechaskim et Bedek Abayit, why don't you repair the breaks in the house? Viato, so now he says, from now on and further, Al Tikhu Kesef Meit Makarechem, don't you take any money, Kilubedek Abayit Idnu, the money will not go through you, but rather, new system. Vayeotu HaKohanim, the Kohanim agreed, Levilti Kaha Kesef, not to take the money, Me'itam, from the people, Ulevilti Chazek Et Bedek Abayit. We won't take the money, and we don't have the responsibility of refurbishing the Beit HaMikdash. So Yehoyada HaKohen went, and what he did was he took a box. This is going to be the first Pushka in history. He makes a box and he puts a hole in the box, and anybody who wants to can come and place money into that box. And then there's a whole the Kohen took Aron Echod by Yikov Chor Bedalto, and he made a hole in it, and he put it near the Mizbeach. So that when a person comes into the house of God, he will put his money there. And then Pasuk Yirav says, when there was a lot of money, so the sofer, the secretary, the treasurer, everybody together would come and they would begin to count the money. And very last pasuk, perhaps the last two sukkim. They didn't have to make any accounting with the people to whom the money was given, because they did everything was done in trustworthy fashion. You could count on them. They were no longer concerned that there may be any kind of problems with the money. To me, that brings to mind first a medrash, beautiful medrash on Parashat Pekudei, the medrash Tanchuma. I want to read some parts of the medrash to you. Amar Moshe. Moshe said, Yodei ani sheYisrael rognim heim. I know that Jews are complainers. Hareini osilahem cheshbon. I'm going to make an accounting. Mikol melechet haMishkan, from everything that was raised for the Mishkan. There were awesome sums of kesef, zohov, nechoshes, argomon, talalshoni, sheish. A great deal was raised in the campaign for the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu decides that he's going to make an accounting. That's the Sedra, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. This is the accounting of the Mishkan. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I know that Jews are complainers. Hareini osilam cheshbon. I'm going to make an accounting. Hiskil lasos cheshbon imahem. So he began to make the accounting. As it says, Moshe tells the Jewish people, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. These are the accountings of the Mishkan. He gave them an accounting on kol davar v'davar, each and every item, la zohov, la kesef, la nechoshes, the gold, the silver, the copper, the kesef pikudei ha'eda, and all of the kesef pikudei ha'eda means the money that was received from the half shekels that ended up equaling 100 kikar of silver. It's a lot of silver. Just believe me, it's a lot of silver. And he went through all of the nechoshes. He went through and as he's making the accounting and it comes down to the bottom line, from the millions upon millions of shekels of silver that were involved in this construction, he's missing 1,775 shekel. Now, let me explain to you. 1,775 shekel in an awesome project such as the Mishkan can't even call petty cash. It's absolutely meaningless. It's nothing. It's nothing. But Moshe can't make the cheshbon. And he knows that they're going to turn this 1,775 insignificant number, of Moshe Rabbeinu's finger, his hand was in the till. God forbid he was on the take. He was on the take. So he begins the whole operation all over again. Item by item. Who knows how long it's going to take him. Arche Heyid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Einav, the Medrash says, until God opened up his eyes. And you know what he had overlooked? All of the hangings and all of the drapes that made up the walls of the Mishkan were hanging from 1,750 hooks. Each hook was made from a shekel of silver. That's exactly how Moshe Rabbeinu felt. Yes? Yeah, it was free for any kind of donation, any kind of donation. But one of the donations that is mentioned is the half shekel.
But they could give more.
They could give more. So therefore, what brought him to this moment of great crisis, the Medrash says? Because he decided to make the accounting. Why did he make the accounting? God trusts Moshe Rabbeinu, Shenema, the whole Beisi in my entire house. Ne'eman who? He is trustworthy. Sounds very much like that next to last pasuk in the Haftorah. Ki be'emunahem osim. They are doing it with trustworthiness. Moshe natan cheshbon. God trusts him. Moshe has to make a cheshbon. And if Moshe shama litzoni, I thought he heard the jokesters. Shahayu mesichen achrav that spoke behind his back. Because it says, "V'ha'yo kitzeit Moshe." When Moshe would go out, they would look after him. They would watch him. They watched him like a hawk. Umaha you owned him. What did they say about him? So Rabbi Yitzchak said that they used to say good things about him. And when somebody would say good things about Moshe, his friend would answer him, "Reika, you nothing. Adam shenisman al malechas hamishkan." A person who's been put in charge of the Mishkan, al kikrei kesef, al kikrei zohar, she'iman chekev lo mishka v'lo minyan. A man has been put in charge of such an awesome amount of money, it's incalculable, can't count it. Matarotza, what do you want? Shalom Yosher, he shouldn't have gotten rich on the job. Of course he got rich on the job. It stuck to his hands. Kishishoma came. When Moshe Rabbeinu heard this, Amar, he said, Chayechem, I swear to you, Mishenigmenu Melechet HaMishkan, when the work of the Mishkan is going to be finished, Anina Tein Lechem Cheshbon, I'm going to give you an accounting. Kivon Shenigmera, when the work was completed, Amalehem, he said to them, Ele Pekudei HaMishkan. This is the accounting of the Mishkan. I think that there's one idea that is clear in the Haftorah, and is equally clear in the Seder, the same idea, and I think that's why the Haftorah was chosen. Of course, you could ask me, but the Haftorah wasn't chosen for the Seder. The Haftorah was chosen for the Mafter. Just hang in over there. There's one thread that goes through the reading of the Torah, the reading of the Haftorah, the Mafter, Shabbos Shkolim. One thread. The thread can be summed up in one pasuk, a pasuk that appears toward the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bnei God and Bnei Reuven, the sons of God and the sons of Reuven, who want to remain on the other side of the Jordan, your brothers are going to go out to battle, and you're going to remain behind. Can't do that. So they said, Moshe, we never planned on doing that. We're going to go out. We're going to wage war. We're going to leave our women and children behind, but we're going out, and we're not going to return until Eretz Yisrael has been conquered. And Moshe over there says to them, v'yitem nikiyim, you have to be clean, pure. V'yitem nikiyim ve'enei Hashem v'Yisrael. Person has to be clean in the eyes of God and Israel. Even if you know that what you're doing is 100% biyosher ube'emuna and it's honest, you have to make sure that nobody should be able to suspect you of anything. You have to be completely above board. Everything, for everything, there has to be an accounting. Honesty and integrity is the underpinning of the whole Haftorah. Why didn't the Kohanim want to do it? The Kohanim didn't want to repair the Beit HaMikdash because that meant that all of that money is going to have to go through their hands. They didn't want that responsibility. They wanted to remain as the teachers and spiritual leaders of Israel. They wanted to remain clean and pure. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to make sure that he's clean and pure in the eyes of God. In the eyes of God, It's okay. God says, "Behold, basing them, and who in my entire house, he is trustworthy." But you have to be clean in the eyes of Israel. I say, therefore, that this is chosen as the Haftorah for Parshat Shkolin because here is the annual campaign for money. So that the purpose of the Haftorah is not merely to remind everybody the time has come to bring the Shkolin. In every town, village, and hamlet in Eretz Yisrael, there are going to be people collecting it. You know what the whole purpose of the Haftorah is? A message to everybody who's involved with it. Be clean. This is not Bank HaPoalim. Hayarkon, you understand? Just Hayarkon, don't be wrong. We're not talking about all the 249 other branches of Bank HaPoalim. How often do we have all sorts of monies are raised and then for all sorts of institutions and they simply, it goes. It's a dangerous thing when people have money going through their hands. You have to make sure that there's an accounting for it, that you use it for the right thing. I believe that's the whole purpose of the Haftorah. You have to be clean in the eyes of God and Yisrael. And by the way, I think that's why the Ashkenazim only took that segment which talks about the campaign for the money, the fact that the Kohanim don't want to do it, and then that they make the big pushka, and then there's a whole group of people that are going to have to be there together to take out the money, to collect it, to count it, so that everything is being done open and above board. So I say the Haftorah is not merely to announce to everybody the time has come to give your half a shekel to the Beit HaMikdash. The Haftorah is also there to warn everybody, wherever they may be, that this has to be done with absolute honesty and integrity. It's holy money. I take that back. Even not holy money, one has to deal with integrity and with honesty. Why, how could I have said something like that? Even non-holy money, even if it's not part of the money that's given for the sacrifices, has to be with honesty and integrity. I mean, unfortunately, that happens to be one of the problems of our society. There is shchitut, what's corruption? Corruption. It's, I don't know if it's power that corrupts as much as money. Money that corrupts. The whole purpose of the Haftorah is to make sure that one doesn't fall into the trap of being corrupted by money. There's also something else that's very important over here. In this medrash that we learned about Moshe Rabbeinu, of all the fascinating things, what did he forget? He didn't forget the big things. He forgot the little ones. But you know what's even more fascinating? Those little ones held up the whole Mishkan. There would have been no Mishkan without it. It's obvious, therefore, that when is Moshe Rabbeinu making the accounting after the Mishkan is already standing? If all of the materials would be lying out over there, so he'd see a pile of 1,700... and 50 hooks, silver hooks. But he doesn't see the 1,750 silver hooks because the tapestries are hanging and the tapestries cover up the hooks. You don't let the hooks be seen. So he forgot it. There's an important message in this medrash. The message of the medrash is we think sometimes Judaism is Shabbos, Kashrus, and Paras HaMishpacha. That's it. No. There are so many little things. There are so many seemingly little things. Yes, the time when Shabbos begins and the time where Shabbos ends. Yes, using something that belongs to somebody else, even if it's only a shava pruta, or taking something that belongs to somebody, really doesn't make much difference. I don't know, I've been going through all sorts of halachas with regard. A woman calls me and says she has a lot of guests. She has a lot of guests. And over a period of time, guests leave things behind. You understand? And she says she has a whole box full of sweaters and jeans and hairs. I mean, we know it, of course, when the grandchildren come for Shabbos. So, of course, I always tell them, make sure that you take everything. There'll be a sack, there'll be a shoe, there'll be, you know, all sorts of things left around the house. But that's not bad, so you know who it came from. What do you do with all of that stuff? It's a very, very difficult halacha to deal with. I mean, you can't just go throw it out, and you can't even just go give it to tzedakah. The halacha of hashavas aveda, returning something to somebody, is a mitzvah saseim in our Torah. Yeshivas and institutions have this problem. At the end of the school year, especially girls' schools, they leave behind all of their clothing because they know that when they go back to the United States, anything they bought a year ago is out of style completely. They wouldn't wear that stuff if you paid them. They're going to buy a whole new wardrobe when they come back. They leave all sorts of stuff. I remember I was in one of the schools and I saw the tape recorders and the sweaters and the books and the sugar bag. So the poskim have been dealing with this question. That the sign that they said you can't do anything about the past, but for the future, a sign sort of anything that's left after 30 days is going to be given away, so that people are warned in advance what is going to be done. The best that I was able to come up with for this woman is, I think I have something that I can depend on. I mean, she can't hold on to all the stuff. So I told her to write a list of each item and give it an approximate evaluation. A one-line description and an evaluation. So should somebody come someday to claim it, then she'll at least be able to say, listen, I'll pay you for it. Huh? Yeah, but she doesn't want to be a shomer. She doesn't want to be a shomer at all. She wants it out of her house. I mean, you know, we don't... We don't live in big homes with big basements. In America, you can have stuff for 50 years piled up in the basement. And somebody told me, what do you think the children are going to do with the Dacha Meves and Shana? We save it all and they're going to throw it all out. And they're going to be right. Just not my tapes and not my shiurim. That's it. Dacha Meves. Yes. I'm not going into that. If one is miyayesh afterwards, that's you shalom yidas. It's not the you need to be a stickle talmud chulchum over here for this. It's not so simple, because then you can say that there's no halacha of giving anything back. What's the whole mitzvah of returning things? Everybody, at some point, either they forgot about it completely or they're miyayesh, they gave up. One more medrash. It's a famous medrash of mine, and like I can't finish the shiur without this medrash. It's a great medrash, and some of you may remember it from 10 years ago or 12 years ago. And as you see, it's very related to the parsha, the haftorah, everything that's going on. And I may want to use it as a speech this Shabbos. I have to speak four times this Shabbos in Englewood. If you're in touch with anybody from Englewood, don't tell them a word. Please, don't tell them a word. All right. There's an amazing medrash. Medrash says the following. Ben Zoma says, Motsinu Pasuk Koleil, we find an all-inclusive an all-embracing pasuk. We find a powerful pasuk in Torah. For who? And that pasuk is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, God our God, God is one. What a powerful pasuk. Benames Omer. Benames says Matsiru Pasuk. We find a Pasuk that's Kolel Yoted, that's even more powerful and more embracing. And that is V'yahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha. Love your friend like yourself. I mean, so obviously we already have a problem in what way does if you have to le'acho kamocha, great pasuk though it is, where does it come to Shema Yisrael? But the real surprise comes with the third opinion in the Medrash. Rav Shimon ben Pazi says, Matzinu pasuk kol el yoteh, we find a pasuk that's even more powerful, more all-encompassing, more embracing, packs a greater wallop. And that pasuk is, V'takeves ha'echod tasa b'boker, you should bring one sheep in the morning, V'takeves ha'sheni tasa b'en raboyim, and the second sheep you should be bringing in the afternoon. These are the Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifices in the Mishkan and then in the Bet HaMikdash. So of course you're all wondering already, where can that pasuk, beautiful, every pasuk is beautiful, you have to say, where does that come to Shema Yisrael and the Avto Recho Kavoha? And then the greatest surprise comes when the Medrash ends by saying, Omad Raploni Al Raglov, an anonymous rabbi, rose to his feet in the Bet HaMedrash and he said, Halacha, the Halacha is like Ben Pazi, the Halacha is like Ben Pazi, the one who said that the greatest pasuk in Torah is one sheep in the morning, one sheep in the afternoon. What's his proof? That the Halacha, and we don't know what kind of Halacha we're talking about over there, the Halacha is like Ben Pazi. Because it says, "Kechol asher ani mareocha," everything that I show you, et tavnit hamishkan, the construction of the mishkan, ve tavnit kol kelav, and the construction of all of its vessels, so shall you make. What's the Medrash mean? What were they searching for that day? It wasn't a chidon hatanach. What were they looking for? What was on the agenda in the Beis Medrash? What was the question that was being asked? What was the issue they were dealing with? They were dealing with the following issue. What one idea is it that if we inculcate that idea, if we get that across to the Jewish people, we can guarantee the survival of the Jewish people into eternity? That's quite a question to be asked by the plenary or opening session of, I don't know, the Conference of Presidents or the Federations. How are we going to guarantee the survival of Klal Yisrael? Ben Zoma said, we have to create a nation or teach our children to have such faith in God, Shema Yisrael, an interrelatedness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, a God consciousness, a sense that there's a creator, an omnipotent and omniscient, one who brought us all into being. The whole world is his. That's powerful. That's very powerful. So Benanis comes along and he says, it's a powerful idea. But there's a problem with powerful ideas. If they're not rooted in the real world, if you can't take this idea and give it flesh and bones, make it alive, if you can't take that and make it concrete, it's just an ephemeral idea, it's an abstract idea, it will never remain by Klal Yisrael. You know what they have to learn? They have to take that Shema Yisrael and translated into all of their relationships with fellow men. Every day, I believe in a God, a creator. It means that he created man in his image. In every one of my relationships with fellow men, it has to be an expression of Shema Yisrael coming alive through V'yahavtal Re'acho Kamocha. Only then will you take that Shema Yisrael and turn it into something that is of great significance. Only that way will it last. So Rav Shimon ben Pazi comes, and Rav Shimon ben Pazi says, "The halach, no, 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 Shema Yisrael is great. you have to echo kamocha, that's terrific, translating Shema Yisrael into the real, concrete, living world, that's great. But there's one more significant ingredient that makes all the difference in the world. The sacrifice in the morning and the sacrifice in the evening. You know what we have to teach our children? We have to teach our children the idea of sacrifice. You know what sacrifice means? That I'm committed to an idea to the extent that I'm ready to give something up for it. If all of these great ideas are going to inhabit one's personality, but he's not ready to let himself be hurt for it or be put out for it, not good enough. What you have to give Jews is a sense of willingness to sacrifice day by day. We have to understand that Yiddishkeit demands sacrifices of us. It demands great effort. It requires of us that, yes, okay, I want to do something else now, but no, I have to daven now. I'm in a rush. I'm sorry, I have to bench, and I have to bench properly. No, I'm ready to give. That's the small stuff. We here live with big sacrifices that have to be made all the time. Omad Raploni, the anonymous rabbi, rose in the Beis Medrash and he said the halach is like Rav Shimon ben Pazi, because it says all of these parshas start truma to tzava ki tisa vayakel pekudai kechol asher ani mareotcha, everything that I've shown you with the construction of the Mishkan and the construction of everything that's in it, so shall you do it. I'll tell you how I understand this. If we would want to sum up Parshat Yitro at its peak point, what is its peak point? God descending from the mountain saying Onochi, the voice of God booming out Onochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God your God. Do you know what emerges from there? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What's all of Parshas Mishpatim? It all deals with the relationship between Jew and fellow Jew. If I would want to say a pasuk that describes all of Parshas Mishpatim, only one pasuk: Yohavta L'Riacho Kamocha. Two major ideas, one sedrif of Shema, one sedrif of Yohavta, and then we go through this whole business. Truma, Tetzaveh, Kitisa, Vayakel, Pekudei, Mishkan, 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 again Mishkan, Mishkan. What's it all about? Ultimately, what's Mishkan about? One thing: sacrifice, daily, constantly. The whole idea of Migdash and Mishkan, not simply a place. There's a great idea that's expressed by Mishkan and Migdash. And that idea is the idea of commitment, real commitment. And the commitment is one that has to be daily, all the time. We have to understand that this, the Rebbein Shem, demands of us. If, God forbid, we're not able to get that message across to our children, then we are in serious, serious trouble. If they want to have it easy, and sometimes we want to help them have it easy, no good, no good. There has to be an understanding that this life is serious, and everything that's serious requires a great deal of keves or echotas or keves or sheni tas ben erboim. This is the whole idea of Tuma Tetzaveh Kitisa Vayakel Pekudei. It's all summed up in the construction of the Mishkan, in the construction of the Bet HaMikdash. This is the idea that's expressed to Klal Yisrael. When they're going to give the Shkolim, then they're all going to be making that symbolic sacrifice. You know what kind of symbolic sacrifice it's going to be? That I am one with the rest of Klal Yisrael. Each person gives half of a shekel. Only two of us together and you can have a full shekel. So there are major ideas that are expressed here in the Torah, and this medrash is my favorite medrash. Is my favorite medrash. I'll miss you next one. Okay. Thank you. I have an announcement here. Phil Chernovsky is also going to do Parashat Zohar next week. He's only going to be dealing not only with the unusual 3-day Purim, but he's going to be dealing with the mitzvah asay of Parashat Zohar. If I'd be here, I'd come. If I'd be here, Phil wouldn't come. He's good. He's good. Yes.
Title.
Oh God. Yeah, I was going to say. Yes. Tell me.
And there's my descendant's house.
That's right.
After my death.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
To tell me.
How are you?
I can't.
You're amazing.
Thank you very
amazing.
Much. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. I just saw Linda. Just saw her Motzei Shabbos.
She knows she has a new grandchild.
She has what?
A new grandchild. Sophie had a boy.
Wait, that was
a 3 weeks ago.
I think I got that message. I think somebody left the message. Yes. Yes. Very, that's why you came?
When are you going?
I'm going Thursday night.
I know, 12 o'clock?
Yeah, I think so, 12 or 12.
That's when I'm going.
Oh, you're going to El Alamos probably. I'm going Continental.
Okay.
I have no choice. Anyway, you should only come for Simchas. Thank you very much. Mazel tov, mazel tov.
How much is Machatzita Shekel this year?
What?
Machatzita Shekel, how much is it this year?
I don't know.
So?
Ask Phil next week. Phil will tell you exactly. Yeah. Oh, God. It's the Haftorah of Parashat Shkolim. Honesty and integrity.
You should film it, you should show it at the Knesset. I really think you should be a scholar in residence at the Knesset, and people should be required to go to your
shul. Thank you very much.
These people have no background, they don't even know about basic honesty. You read the paper, I'm sure.
Yes,
I believe you.
Can we get you in there? I'm serious.
I know you're serious.
You have to take a warm coat with you.
Huh?
Take a warm coat with you.
A who?
A warm coat.
Yes, it's cold there?
Very cold. And have a wonderful trip.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Just, how do I stop it? How do I stop it?